that's based on love and community and really based on the abolition of all forms of oppression. That's the ask. And we have to do that because if we don't do that, we won't be here in several generations. There will be no planet.
I want to thank you so much, as always, Robin, for joining us today. Best of luck to you for the 20th anniversary edition of your book, Freedom Dreams.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
My guest has been Robin D.G. Kelly. He is a professor in the Department of African American Studies, distinguished professor of history, and the Gary B. Nash Endowed Chair in U.S. History at UCLA. And his pathbreaking and highly acclaimed 2002 book, Freedom Dreams: The Black Radical Imagination, has just been republished by Beacon Press on its 20th anniversary. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Kitsap. Like us on Facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hey, Michael here. I'm with the Tin Can Phone Podcast, a radio show where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell you the story from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is your host, Ramses Ja.
Mm-hmm.
I am Q Ward.
That's right.
You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Let's go. Lot to stick around for this show. You know, most of the time we deal with issues that have to do with, you know, black and brown people, black and brown communities, you know, and, you know, other marginalized groups in this country. But, you know, there's been a couple of stories in the news lately that come from our brothers and sisters, our Caucasian brothers and sisters, this tribe, right? And, you know, we are able to deduce that by telling these stories, we can, A, bring some light to these tragedies. You know, those are our family, too, as we reckon. But also we can further illuminate some of the systemic issues that we're talking about. A lot of folks can't hear it. They feel like these are black issues and, you know, they largely are, but that's not to say that they don't affect other communities. So we're going to be sharing some really interesting stories of police misconduct, and really that's it, police misconduct. And because the victims are not black, they're white, you can see the systemic issues if you're not able to just see black people as the way that black people see black people, right? And I get it. The world has taught you to be this way. We're not mad at you. We're just going to share some other stories.
I'm kind of mad.
It's all good. Hey, man, we got
Ramses isn't mad at you is what he meant to say.
We also got a lot more to stick around for as well. We're going to talk about one police department in particular that's been having a tough time, and that kind of shows kind of some more of these systemic issues. And then of course our Way Black History Fact, we're going to talk about a black couple who helped build Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So first and foremost, let's get into some Ebony Excellence. How does that sound, cute?
Sounds great to me. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. Today's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Major Threads, where high fashion meets timeless menswear. You can find out more at majorthreads.com. The story comes by a Huffington Post. All right, let's give this lady her flowers. Ketanji Brown Jackson gives the Supreme Court a history lesson. Giving a forceful performance in defense of the race-conscious history of the 14th Amendment and the Voting Rights Act, noted by Harvard Law as policy that could even lead to the biggest decline in Black and Latino representation in generations. In the case of Merrill versus Milligan, Alabama is asking the court to overturn decades of precedent allowing a limited consideration of race to enable racial minorities to obtain equal political representation in redistricting. If you haven't heard about this, please look it up. This is a crazy thing that's going on.
Groundbreaking.
A transformation of the Voting Rights Act into a race-neutral law, as Alabama is seeking, would roll back that community's progress toward equality. According to Jackson, the 14th Amendment was adopted during this time to, quote, ensure that people who had been discriminated against, the freedmen during the Reconstruction period, were actually brought equal to everyone else in society, and that the entire point of the amendment was to secure rights of freed former slaves. She quoted an 1866 speech by Republican representative of Pennsylvania, indicating that the purpose of the 14th Amendment was to halt the ongoing deprivation of rights and equality from Black men and women across the former Confederate states. So, in short, Alabama is tripping.
Tripping.
And Ketanji Brown Jackson is a shining example of ebony excellence, given that she has a platform and she is using it to bring attention to this matter and let these people know that if they vote wrong, that they are tripping too.
Sometimes when people want to take a trip, you got to give them a map.
Listen, man, she's doing just that. So, all right. So, all right, we're going to move into some heavier things. Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to get right into it. There's no two ways about this. So, we have seen some videos. We hope that you haven't, but it's likely that you have if you're into this type of stuff, social justice, you know, watching the police, making sure everybody gets a fair chance and fair shake at life and at different levels in society. One of the videos that we saw was a young man. He was in his vehicle and I believe he went into a ditch. It was a truck, pickup truck, something like that. And he called for help. He was having a bad day and he made sure to explain to the dispatcher. I'm going to get into this, but just so you are able to follow the story. Calls the 911 dispatcher, asks for help. He explains his situation, make sure everyone knows I'm not dangerous, you know, whatever. He says that he's having like a tough time mentally, something like that. He alludes to it or something like that. And the police show up and talk to him for a while. And then when they were tired of talking to him, they shot him. This young man was white, as I mentioned. And, you know, we tell these black stories over and over again, but, you know, maybe you might hear it a little different when it happens to a white person. Maybe their humanity is a little bit more intact. And again, I'm not mad at you for that. The world has taught you to be that way. Go ahead, Q, you can say it.
I'm definitely mad.
Okay, but I'm not. I understand that you were brought up in a society that taught you to hate better than it taught you to love. I recognize that. Now, Q's mad because you're probably an adult listening to this show and you should know better by now.
You're making a decision.
But I'll continue. So today's this first story rather comes from NBC News, the murder of Christian Glass. Our producer Maggie Bino, and she wanted me to ask the question, why send an armed military, she put the word in quotes, because this is kind of the way that police behave. This isn't like the Andy Griffith Show or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just about behavior, but the way that they're equipped, the way that they're trained, the weapons that they carry, the tactical gear that they wear is very, very...
And the mindset as well. It's like a war. Yeah. They have a war on their community.
It's a military uniform. It's just blue and black.
There you go. And so I think that was Maggie's point. Why send an armed military that can't wait to shoot to help with a mental health issue, what was very obviously a mental health issue? So I'll read. I'm going to get into Christian Glass's statement to the officers. This is him talking. I have two knives, a hammer, and a rubber mallet. This is just what he had in his truck. You know, people are allowed to have things in their truck. Black people too. Okay. And knives are not necessarily weapons. Some people hunt, some people, you know, would, you know, if it's in a truck too, you know.
Remind the audience, was Christian Glass black?
He was not black. He was white. He was a white, young white man. Anyway, he says to the officers, "I have two knives, a hammer, and a rubber mallet, but I am not dangerous. I will keep my hands completely visible," he told the dispatcher, offering to throw them out once officers arrived. Right? So he needs help. "Do you have any weapons in the car?" "Yes, I do have this, this, and this. I will throw, I'm no threat to anybody. I'll throw them out of the car," right? So he called for help. He's dead now. Called for help. Okay. All right, and the story goes on. But officers wouldn't let him throw them out.
So just so we're clear, Ramses, these officers are present because he called for help.
Correct.
Okay.
We've shared this story too. I remember, I mean, you got to swap a couple pieces around, but I remember a story where we shared this story where a black man was, I think he was killed in his living room or his driveway or something like that. It was a similar thing. He called the police, they came and they killed him. So if that didn't hit, maybe this one does. All right, here we go. The officers would not let him throw the things out, telling him to keep the weapons inside the car as they escalated the situation to deadly violence. "Please push me out, drag me out. I'll follow you to a police station," Glass told the officers. "I'm so scared." I'm gonna stop right here. So he's still in his car. He's wanting the officers to push him out of the ditch or like tie a thing to drag him out. He will go with them to the police station. He's afraid. It's nighttime too, by the way, if you haven't seen the video. We saw the video because there's body cam footage.
This is one of those videos.
Yeah, if you are a human being, we say this.
Like, this is one of those videos that kicks you in the stomach.
Yeah, it's very, very sad.
It is not subtle, right? And you're going to get to it as you read some more of the statement, some more of the story. But there is a moment where it seems like, oh, this might
be cool,
go how it should.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
it does not.
It does not. And it is like a kick in the stomach.
Yeah. Yeah,
because there is sometimes where the circumstance create an outcome that shouldn't have happened, right? That still shouldn't have happened, even given the circumstances, it still shouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it colors it in a way where maybe you can give it to someone if they were afraid and they just made a bad judgment call.
Yeah.
This is not one of those situations, man.
I don't think that's just cute talking. You are welcome to watch the video yourself. Again, his name is Christian Glass. We don't recommend that you, we don't celebrate death. We don't celebrate violence against, you know, black bodies. We don't celebrate violence against white bodies either. Again, this is our brother that is now gone because of this institution that really needs to be fixed. And it's our job to explain this and discuss it so that we can move forward. Okay, so yeah, "I'll follow you to a police station," Glass told the officers. "I'm so scared. You need to step out of the car now. Step out of the car," an officer said. "That's a lawful order. Step out of the car now or you'll be removed from the vehicle." Glass responded, "I'm so scared. You're not communicating clearly with me. I don't understand why I have to come out." For a brief second, the responding officers had a moment of clarity. This is what you were talking about, Q. Mm-hmm. And decided to call over a female officer with a much calmer demeanor. As she walked over to the car, Glass put his hands, oh God, into a heart sign and blew kisses at her, illustrating just how big of a threat he was. And I forgot about that part. I completely forgot about that part. Same back at you, but come out and talk to us," she said. Unfortunately, all logic and reason would become non-existent at this point, and instead of leaving the innocent man alone, officers decided to move in. One officer jumped on the hood of Glass's car with a pistol and flashlight in his face as others drew weapons and pointed them at him. Seconds later, as an officer breaks the window, multiple shots were fired and Glass was murdered. And that was the end of the story of Christian Glass. He died right there in that ditch. And the heroes took his life. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
You know what's really hard to reconcile?
What's that?
You know these instances where the body cam footage is missing, right? Like, that's an officer saying to themselves, I'm about to do something messed up.
Yeah.
I'm about to get rid of this camera. I'm about to turn this camera off. And then it's just my word against. When something like this happens and the body camera footage is just readily available, that shows how much they get to operate with impunity. That it's not even like, we feel like murdering today. That's what we on. And who's going to do something to us for it? This is what we feel like doing today. Yes, when we get to the station, you can have this camera. Do with it what, you know, as you may. I'll deal with whatever my punishment or whatever the consequences are in the morning or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like the arrogance isn't the right word. It's apathy. This complete, I'm going to just completely disregard this person's life. Because by the authority given to me by this badge, you are beneath me.
I want to talk about this, the authority by the badge. So watch this. We had this conversation before on the show. We have to recognize that police are people and the institution of policing is flawed. Those are two things that we have to recognize. And we accept people as our brothers and sisters. If they are endowed with consciousness by our common creator, they are our brothers and sisters. This is a fundamental principle of this show and certainly of my life, and I believe yours as well. The institution of policing is wrong in the way that it's executed. I'll make my point. There will inevitably be people that will defend even this story of this young white man. Right, the police, they were justified and that they were afraid and he didn't listen to them and whatever, you know, you have to protect the police, you know, stand by the, you know, there are people that will do this, right? But they will have to accept that he shouldn't have died. He admitted that he was scared. He called them for help. You know what I mean? Like, if you examine all the optics, any reasonable person will say, yeah, that's unfortunate that he shouldn't have died, right?
It's so important for you to keep saying that part, that he called them for help. They didn't just come across him.
Right.
And they, because there could be some confusion there, right? Mm-hmm. If they just come across this truck in a ditch, this man might be crazy. This man might be angry.
They don't know what they're going into.
Dangerous. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. No, it wasn't that either. Mm-hmm. So it's important that you keep highlighting that
part. Sure, sure, sure. So watch this. Those people that say, well, you know, the police have to protect themselves if they felt a threat, blah, 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 whatever. They are saying that Christian Glass did not have that right. A, that's de facto, that by default. They're,
he don't get to protect himself.
Sure, the police do. And they are accepting that as collateral damage. Remember we had that conversation? They are saying that, well, this system works for most folks. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work, but we're just going to deal with it. Sometimes and we exist, the show exists, because we fight against that narrative. There should be no such thing as collateral damage, not when you're dealing with human life. The FAA exists because no plane should fall out of the sky, right? That's why it exists. That should never, ever happen, not one time. And if it does, it's a national tragedy. And yet these people that run to defend the institution of policing blindly, not the individual, the institution, police need, you know, our broad sweeping support. They're our heroes in our community, whatever these narratives that get chronicled around the country. These people accept that, well, there's just going to be some margin of error when you're dealing with this. And that we feel on this show, I feel personally, you can see me, I'll be in the street. I feel like that is unacceptable. And as long as they give me a microphone and a signal and a satellite dish, I'm going to keep saying it. Yo, rest in peace, Christian Glass. I will say your name on this show. I got to finish this. Sorry, y'all. In statements, the Clear County, I have to say this part because journalists now or whatever. In statements, the Clear Creek County Sheriff's Department office said Glass became, quote, argumentative and uncooperative, unquote, and tried to stab an officer. I have to say that.
No, you got to say what's next.
I'm going to say that too. But you're welcome to watch this for yourself. But the video from the arrest shows that Glass, who made a heart with his hands toward officers and said he was terrified, never even got out of his vehicle.
Believe that. Once again, they know that they turned in those cameras.
Wait a minute. Hold on. The way that, because you know the cameras don't come out until way later. Yeah. So the police report originally, like, you can look this up too. We don't have time to go into it, but Maggie, our producer, showed me everything at the beginning. The police report was written just like that. Like, he was argumentative and he, you know, didn't put the heart hands.
Trying to stab us.
So watch this. Like, while we're here, why is it that he might get, if you're listening to our show, you know, and you feel sad for this, and maybe you haven't felt sad, or maybe, you know, when you hear some stories about Black and brown people losing their life at the hands of the police, why is it that you can feel sad for this person? Because they were scared of the police and they were doing hard hands. But it's tough for you to reconcile, well, why did a Black guy run from the police if he didn't have anything to hide? Why does your mind not go to, well, maybe he was scared? If anybody got a reason to be scared of the police, do I need to finish the sentence? All right, let's move on. I'm not mad. Just making some points. I want you to think.
Very mad.
Hey, but I've learned to crush these problems with my mind vice. You know what I mean? I have to keep my spirit intact. I have to remain positive and optimistic, because we are going somewhere together, and we, for better or worse, whether we like it or not, are leading.
I am not as refined and polished a human being.
And that's okay, man. But you got to keep it real.
My brother and co-host over here.
You got to keep it real, man. We need both.
I am not okay.
But listen.
I'm very angry.
But listen, as my point was that we have to lead. That's what we're doing. We're leading. And if we can, as often as we can, as often as we have the capacity to do so, my hope is that you and I both always lead with love. So if you're listening to this, despite the frustration in our voice, I want you to know that we do love you. And we love you too, Christian Glass. We will say your name because it matters. Your life mattered. It did. And you did not deserve that death.
Am I seeing correctly that we have another one?
Yeah, there's another one. We actually had three. I don't really have time to get to two of them today. But this one.
Watch this one too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the one that made it to TMZ. So maybe you watch this one too, if you're listening. So this one, our story rather, comes from NPR. The name is Eric Cantu. So Eric is, I believe he's still fighting for his life. Life support, yeah. So we're going to say his name because, you know,
no,
we need Eric, to say his name,
Eric,
but it's not.
The victim. Eric is the officer.
No. Eric Cantu is the person who was shot. Yeah, that's right. So a now ex-police officer is charged after shooting a teenager eating in a parking lot. So if you've seen this video, the way it goes is an officer, the video part of it, goes up to a car, opens the door, tells the kid to get out of the car. Kid's eating. The kid's like, huh, what? And then all of a sudden the officer just starts shooting him, and the kid's like, oh my god, and he like attempts to drive off. Yeah. And again, the way the story got written up was like, it's crazy how the police can misrepresent the truth. And
why would they ever do such a thing?
It happens all the time. In fact, you should listen to the BIN Daily podcast show that I do, because I talk about this very thing. I have a recent installment. It's called One More Thing, that Maggie helped me produce, by the way. So shout out to Maggie, if you know him again.
She do.
And we were talking about copaganda, which is why we tend to think of police as being the good guys all the time, which in theory they should be, but why we never can, it's hard for us to see them as being the bad guys, because we've watched so many films and so forth, and the police have had their hand in every film to control the narrative of how they're portrayed since Dragnet.
I need you to finish reading this story.
I'll do it. Sorry, I'll be going on my tangent, but you got to know. All right. And now former San Antonio police officer was charged Tuesday with two counts of aggravated assault by a peace officer for shooting and gravely wounding a teen eating a hamburger in his car in a McDonald's parking lot. The teen had begun driving away when the officer opened fire. Cantu is still unconscious and on life support, his family said Tuesday. There is no improvement in his condition, the family said in a statement. Brenand, a rookie officer, reported the vehicle Cantu was sitting in had evaded him the night before during an attempted traffic stop.
Wow.
Brenand said he suspected the vehicle was stolen. In body camera footage released by police, Brenand opens the car door and tells Cantu to get out. The car drives backwards with the door open, and the officer fires multiple times into the vehicle. He continues to shoot as the car drives away. Investigators quickly determine that the use of deadly force was unwarranted, and Brenand was fired. Charges against Cantu of aggravated assault and evading arrest were dropped.
So they just made up some trumped up charges to throw on Mr. Eric Cantu to justify almost killing him.
Yeah.
For simply sitting in his car and eating food.
So here's the thing. I say this all the time because it's such a good idea. Insurance for police officers, just like doctors, okay? That way if an officer messes up, they're uninsurable, they can't keep working. Because this guy, they fired him, he's go get a job somewhere else. This is what happens all the time. We know this. Keep them guns in the trunk, okay? 99% of the time, you're not shooting a gun. And when you might need to shoot a gun, that's when you take it out. But if you have it at the ready.
And you should have to think, I got to go get
that. That's what I'm trying to say. And this is what they do in a lot of countries around the world where gun ownership is legal, right? They have the right to bear arms just the same. And, you know, there's 100 other things for anybody that wants to look a layer or two deeper. But the fact is that there's a well-established narrative about police being the good guys. And we're telling two stories because, you know, police shooting another black guy is week to week around here. Telling
500 stories.
But, you know, this past couple of weeks, we had some of our brothers and sisters from the Caucasian tribe that have been had some really tough police interactions. And we're hoping that Eric Cantu makes it through because he didn't deserve to die. He was just as surprised as we were seeing the video. But, you know, this is the world that we live in. And, you know, we have to share these stories. And no matter how tough they are, we got to keep moving forward. So that's that.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists with journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
But if you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Jai.
He is Ramses Jai. I am Q Ward. You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. Be sure to stick around. We got a lot more show in store for you. We're going to be talking about a very uncool police department. And no, I'm not talking about Uvalde. It's funny because there's more than one. But yeah, we're going to talk about the Kansas City Police Department. Also, we're going to tell a little story about a black couple who helped build the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which you may know of as Black Wall Street. You know, for our Way Black History Fact, we tell stories to give you some context so you know that our story runs a lot deeper and we didn't just start in the 80s with Eazy-E. You know, whatever you might think, we got to bring some game to you. You're not getting it in school. So that's what we're here for. So stick around for that. First up, we're going to discuss BABA, Baba, how to become a better ally. Today's Baba is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast that can be found on iHeartMedia or at BINnews.com, where you will find discussions and interviews on topics and news stories important to the Black community. Hosted by yours truly and featuring sometimes Q Ward and Maggie B. Noah. Today's story comes via Black Enterprise, we are going to clap for these folks. Stepping up as a launch employer in 2020, PNC Bank, I actually bank with those guys. We have our business accounts. My family has our business accounts with them. PNC Bank has announced that they have achieved the Management Leadership for Tomorrow Black Equity at Work Certification, MLT, earning recognition as the first financial institution to achieve the certification. Achieving certification demonstrates that PNC is on the right course, but this is not the finish line, said PNC's Chief Diversity Officer, Gina Coleman. She goes on, We remain focused on and committed to continued progress. We have a responsibility to our employees, stakeholders, and the community to continue our journey toward equity with the goal of being a better company, better employer, better neighbor, and better investment. The certification focuses on people, purchasing, and philanthropy, and centers on five pillars: representation, compensation, workplace culture, business practices, contributions, and investments. To learn more about achieving the Black Equity at Work certification for your organization, visit mlt.org. Also, because I know she would like for me to say it, Bank of America treats Black people badly. Moving on. Let's talk about a very brief timeline of one police department's corruption. Okay, so the timeline starts, for our purposes, of course it runs a lot deeper, but for our purposes, we're going to tell a story starting in 2021. And in 2021, Jay-Z's Team Rock files a lawsuit against the Kansas City Police, citing a laundry list of complaints about abuse. Now, if you've listened to the show before, you recognize that we talk about police about as much as we talk about politics. Those are the two big pillars upon which the show was founded and the reason that the show exists. I remember us saying this early on. We wish we didn't have to do this show. We wish we could do another hip hop show. That's where we come from. We used to break new music and, you know, we're DJs. This is where we come from. And the reason we do this show is because it's necessary. Nobody talks about this stuff in long form format in this space on hip hop radio formats. And I know that we have some other formats around the country that carry our program as well. And we appreciate all of you. But these conversations, they don't exist in the circles where we come from, and we felt like we could contribute something meaningful. Again, if you listen to our show, you recognize that we talk about policing a lot. Policing is the one thing that a lot of Black people brush up against, a lot of brown people brush up against, a lot of our Native brothers and sisters brush up against, even our AAPI brothers and sisters, you know what I mean? And it doesn't feel, it doesn't, and then, you know, for Black people especially, there is like statistical evidence that shows that we aren't treated fairly. So when we talk about another police department, to you, it may sound, again, if you listen to the show, to you, it may sound like, here we go again.
Here they go again.
Right? But seldom do we get to do a deep dive like this, where we can really pick apart exactly how deep corruption can run, exactly how much is covered up and for how long, exactly the how much harm can be done to a community by what are effectually bullies who have blind community support from a not insignificant part and segment of the population, namely the population whose interests the police protect and defend and espouse. In other words, if you look like the police officers, yeah, I'm trying to say something without saying it, mm-hmm. So please hear between my words. If you look like the police officers, you might not see what the effect of policing can do, and the extent that they go to cover it up. And you are espousing this group of people who are perpetuating harm on a community that you may have turned a blind eye to because you don't live that life.
The interesting thing is how selective they've become with that loyalty and support, though, as we're going to do a deep dive into.
Talk to us. Say this now before we get there. Go ahead.
Well, you'll see that when law enforcement has to police law enforcement, then they start talking about defunding law enforcement.
Oh, yeah, that's
especially
right.
Especially in cases like the FBI going after their leader and or the police.
Yeah.
They don't understand. They can't wrap their
head around. Yeah, there has to be some form of corruption or whatever. Law enforcement is no longer law enforcement. It's corruption. It's the deep state. It's a, you know, these conspiracy.
As long as they're doing what I want them to do, we have to back the blue.
If they don't do what I want, then
if they do anything different, however, they're by nature corrupt and should be defunded.
Mm. I'm glad you said that. All right. So Jay-Z's Team Rock, they filed a lawsuit against the Kansas City police, citing a laundry list of complaints about abuse. That's September 2021. Let's move on. This part of our story comes from the Black Information Network. The headline is FBI arrests former detective accused of sexually preying on Black women. I'll read this. Police detective in Kansas has been charged with federal civil rights crimes involving sexual assault. On September 15th, retired detective Roger Golubsky, 69, was arrested after a federal grand jury indicted him on 6 counts related to the rape of 2 women he was accused of raping 2 Black women and forcing them to perform sexual acts on him in his vehicle and at their homes while he was working for the Kansas City Police Department. So, we haven't even talked about the laundry list of stuff from the Rockefeller or the Jay-Z lawsuit, right? This is a whole new thing, right? From the same police department. This is a detective, police detective, and he was raping Black women. Looks like this was an ongoing thing. And he was doing this in uniform in his car, right? So the corruption of power, the perversion of authority. And, you know, we're talking about Black people again, so I'm hoping you're still with us. We told those white stories, so, you know, just try to stretch that empathy a little bit, because we have beating hearts and we love our families and we want our tomorrows to be better than today. We're just like you. We have consciousness from the same creator, whoever you decide that is, right? And this is the sort of thing that happens. And again, folks, especially when it's Black people, folks call it, you know, collateral damage. They say it's a few bad apples. They say they don't realize that a system that gives blind loyalty, what do you call it? You call it carte blanche, and you call it something else where there's no consequences. I love how you say it.
Impunity.
Impunity. That's another one. Where it's like, you know, if you were the bully in high school, if the girls didn't like you in high school, whatever it was, your story is, and you get a little older and you decide, I'm going to be a police officer, there's nothing to screen these people out. And even if there was, it's so easy to get through a screening process. You answer a couple of questions the right way, and, you know, boom, here's a badge and a gun. Go out and do whatever, right? And the problem, I think, is that when we're dealing with police officers, when we're dealing with people that have this type of authority that can move with impunity, and we empower them, we support them, we call them heroes, right? It's a job. A hero, in my opinion, is when you do something above and beyond your job. Like, there was no money involved. You did something truly heroic. You know, being a hero because you put on a certain uniform, I feel like that's, you know, that's setting the bar kind of low. You know what I mean? I wouldn't call myself a hero unless I did something heroic, right? But as far as the story with this officer and these people, the collateral damage part of it, the few bad apples part of it, that's the part that makes it very difficult, because oftentimes when we tell Black stories, this is the way that the opposition to our narrative frames it. Well, you know, there's some bad apples, there's, you know, and they don't look at a system that blindly support, like that empowers these people, makes them feel like they're gods among men. And when we look at examples like this over and over and over and over again.
You have another example here.
Oh, man.
Same police department.
Mm-hmm.
Please pile on.
All right, let's do it. So the next one comes from CNN. Same police department. This comes from late September 2022. So
it's just same police department, same month, same year.
Yeah. This comes via CNN. The Department of Justice is investigating allegations that Kansas City police racially discriminated against black officers. So there's a whole new dynamic to this. The U.S. Department of Justice is investigating whether the Kansas City Police Department in Missouri engaged in a pattern of racial discrimination against black officers, according to a letter sent to the agency Monday. Quote, our investigation is based on information suggesting that KCPD may be engaged in certain employment practices that discriminate against black officers and applicants. The letter provided to CNN by the police department reads, investigators will be looking into allegations involving race-based disparities in hiring, promotions, detective assignments, disciplining officers, and maintaining a hostile work environment, the DOJ said in the letter. Police commissioners welcome federal civil rights investigation into the KCPD. The president of the police board says commissioners welcome a federal investigation. And the U.S. Department of Justice's civil rights investigation may be the result of a number of recent lawsuits by police officers accusing the police department of racial discrimination and retaliation. Just last month, a police detective sued KCPD claiming he was punished for reporting another officer's illegal search. In April, a sergeant sued over alleged racial profiling during a traffic stop, and two black female officers sued the department alleging discrimination, retaliation, and a hostile work environment. Okay, so I want to take a moment to talk about black officers. Let's talk about black officers in the Deep South. But, you know, all over, but you know, the South, we have recent examples of black officers in the South doing some real anti-black stuff.
It doesn't have to be specific to black officers in the South. I think the environment is unique for black officers in areas that are not highly populated by black people or that are only populated by black people, because those present two very, very different sets of circumstances.
Sure, sure.
But both of which are kind of tricky for said officer.
Yeah.
Right? When you're policing a community where everyone looks like you, what we have to say out loud is that bad people exist.
Doesn't matter what color they are.
You know what I mean? So police officers are going to encounter some people that are bad, that are black. The same is going to be said in the reverse, however. Being a police officer does not remove you from being a person.
Yeah.
So just like bad people exist, bad people can become police officers, ladies and gentlemen.
Talk to them.
I hate to have to say that to you like you're a fourth grader, but sometimes we remove our own logic from the idea that just by nature of having passed, you know, whatever screening and that was involved to become an officer
and taking an oath,
that you are by nature a good person because of it. That's just not how life works. So the interesting position that you're put in when you're a black officer in a community where no one looks like you versus being one in the community where everyone looks like you, and how different that might be if your partner does or doesn't look like you, and just all the different challenges that come from upholding a system that is by its nature designed to put its boot on the face and the neck of people that look like you. It's a really, really interesting dynamic and really complex set of circumstances for black police officers, not just in the Deep South, but more specifically in those environments that are that have polarity, right?
Sure. Well, there's something else to consider here. When you think of a black officer, you know, you might not think that a black officer is capable of being racist against black people. You know, not UQ, but listen, our listeners.
Me.
Yeah, no, I know you know this. Oh, you from the motor, right? From that D?
Yes, sir.
So I know
that's
that.
Where I was born and raised.
But you, our listener, you might not think about it like that. You know, you might think the solution to all these systemic policing issues is that we need to have more Black officers in the community. So let me help you with this. So let's take the Kansas City Police Department, right? If you are a good person and you happen to be Black, right? And you report in Kansas, or we've shared these stories in the South. This is why I mentioned the South. You're a good person and you're Black, in that order. And you see a fellow officer doing something that's not all the way right, and you report that. You see the backlash here. We talked about this before. Now your job is threatened, your hostile work environment, this, that, and the third, right? And that
now
happens.
Now your life is threatened.
All of that. And that happens to white officers too, but I want to make a point about Black officers here. Now watch this. And this is why I wanted to make sure that you knew that if you think that Black officers, more Black officers is the solution to the systemic issue, that you had an idea framework, we can do this thought experiment together. So let's say you are not a good person and you happen to be Black, and you don't want to report, you know, on the other officers in your department that are misbehaving. Put it kindly, mildly. That at best means you're complicit, and at worst means that you're doing everything in your power to fit in with your white fellow officers, meaning that you are perpetuating the same type of oppression, the same type of white supremacy as the white officers. It's very easy for a Black person to perpetuate white supremacist ideas and bring harm to communities. It's very easy for people to feel like they are above other people. That's not a police and normal person thing. That's also a Black officer over other Black people thing. That badge and that gun, we've elevated these folks. And the thing is, the reason I keep saying this, you might think that this is normal. Yeah, well, you get a little bit of authority, blah, blah. That means to me that you haven't traveled. Between me and Q, we've seen most of the earth. They don't do it like that in other countries. In other countries, the police fear the people. The police work for the people. Now, your mind might short circuit when I say that, because you're like, well, police shouldn't be afraid of the people. The police should be the ones in charge. Of course, we need order. And of course, you know, and when you're dealing with, you know, an individual, you know, yeah, the police at the end of the day should have the final say. I think that's true in most parts of the world, you know, because there are people who, you know, overstep, and we need folks to come in and set it straight. We recognize that, right? But there's a healthy concern for police if they don't do their job the right way in other countries. They are afraid of the people, plural, right? More often than is true here.
Or the people, singular. That's why it's scary.
Talk to me. Say it. Explain that.
They are afraid of the people, singularly that entire group as one.
Mm.
Holding you accountable.
That's what, okay.
Of doing the job, okay. Properly.
We're saying the same thing. Yeah.
Right. The mm-hmm. people, plural, here is the problem. Our message, our voice, our stance, our position is not singular at all. The partisan and
yeah.
the clarity and opinion yeah. tears us apart right. in a way that, in the face of what's right, we just want to do what's opposed to them.
As long as we're doing the opposite of what they're doing.
We don't even care what's right or wrong no more.
Yeah.
Right? Our stance right now is back to blue and Blue Lives Matter, because it's opposed to whatever they're saying.
We got to talk about that eventually. We will.
As soon as it ain't that no more, then we don't really care about blue lives. Because on that day in January
6th, yeah.
they might not have been on the same thing as us.
Yeah.
So they got way, their lives got way less valuable that day. Again, that's another conversation. But as you said, the people, you said plural, but I think it's more
singular. No, I see what you're saying.
That accountability yeah. is there, and you can't just do whatever you want because you feel like it, because you might not just lose your job, but you might end up in prison as well.
There you go. The accountability is way different. And they're very, again, they're very easy, low-hanging options that we can do to put more police accountability into the equation. Even one of them would change the optics of the narrative, change, shift the paradigm entirely. even one, even if it's just officers carry personal insurance, and if they, if a lawsuit comes up, then they're uninsurable, unemployable. You know what I mean? Any one of them, put the guns in the trunk, whatever.
That a lawyer can lose their life, their ability to practice law, and a doctor as well.
Talk
to you. Police should lose the privilege to be able to be an officer if there's gross misconduct.
Keep talking.
You know what I mean? You should not be able to, we're going to use this word again, violate the laws that the citizens you're policing have to live up to with impunity. You shouldn't just be able to.
Ooh-wee. I like when you talk like that.
You know what I mean? So, again, I think people get confused with what we're upset about.
And I want to make sure that I clear that up. I historically have been, this is Ramses talking, that's my name, it's on my birth certificate, have been critical of policing, the institution, the way it is done. It could be better. And again, as long as I have a microphone and a satellite dish or two, I'm going to keep saying it. The individuals are a part of a system that empowers often the worst parts of them, human beings, and they are not beyond redemption. The system, I believe, is, you know, we need to change it fundamentally, but the human beings are not beyond redemption. I do believe in forgiveness. I do believe in having love at the center of the narrative. And this is how this conversation sounds. And I don't really know how else to put any more sugar on that one for you, but I don't think you need it, because that's pretty.
You said that as gracefully as it could be said.
Thank you. All right. Well, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Stretch my leg a little bit. All right. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media, and our story comes from history.com. Before the Tulsa Race Massacre, where the city's black district of Greenwood was attacked by a white mob, resulting in 2 days of bloodshed and destruction, the area had been considered one of the most affluent African-American communities in the United States for the early part of the 20th century. The massacre, which began on May 31st, 1921, and left hundreds of black residents dead and 1,000 houses destroyed, often overshadows the history of the black enclave itself. Greenwood District, with a population of 10,000 at that time, had thrived as the epicenter of African-American business and culture, particularly on bustling Greenwood Avenue, commonly known as Black Wall Street. Founded in 1906, Greenwood was developed on Indian territory, the vast area where Native American tribes had been forced to relocate, which encompasses much of modern-day eastern Oklahoma. Some African Americans who had been former slaves of the tribes and subsequently integrated into tribal communities acquired allotted lands in Greenwood through the Dawes Act, a U.S. law that gave land to individual Native Americans, and many black sharecroppers fleeing racial oppression relocated to the region as well in search of a better life post-Civil War. Oklahoma begins to be promoted as a safe haven for African Americans who start to come, particularly post-emancipation to Indian Territory, says Michelle Place, executive director of the Tulsa Historical Society and Museum. The largest number of black townships after the Civil War were located in Oklahoma. Between 1865 and 1920, African Americans founded dozens of black townships and settlements in the region. O.W. Gurley, a wealthy black landowner, purchased 40 acres of land in Tulsa, naming it Greenwood after the town of Mississippi. Credited with having the first black business in Greenwood in 1906, he had a vision to create something for black people by black people. Gurley started with a boarding house for African Americans. Then word began to spread about opportunities for black people in Greenwood, and they flocked to the district. Gurley would loan money to people who wanted to start a business and had a system where someone who wanted to own a business could get help doing that. Other prominent black entrepreneurs followed suit. J.B. Stratford, born into slavery in Kentucky, later became a lawyer and activist, moved to Greenwood in 1898. He built a 55-room luxury hotel bearing his name, the largest black-owned hotel in the country. An outspoken businessman, Stratford believed that black people had a better chance of economic progress if they pooled their resources. Not a bad idea. A.J. Smitherman, a publisher whose family moved to Indian Territory in the 1890s, founded the Tulsa Star, a black newspaper headquartered in Greenwood that became instrumental in establishing the district's socially conscious mindset. The newspaper regularly informed African Americans about their legal rights and any court rulings or legislation that were beneficial or harmful to their community. Demands for equal rights were an ongoing mission for Black Americans in Tulsa, despite Jim Crow oppression. Greenwood itself had a railway track running through it that separated the Black and white populations. Consequently, Gurley and Stratford's vision of having a self-contained and self-reliant Black economy came to be not only by desire, but by logistics. Quote, as a practical matter, they had no choice as to where to locate their businesses, unquote, said Johnson. Tulsa was rigidly segregated and Oklahoma became increasingly racist after statehood. On Greenwood Avenue, there were luxury shops, restaurants, grocery stores, hotels, jewelry and clothing stores, movie theaters, barbershops and salons, a library, pool halls, nightclubs, and offices for doctors, lawyers, and dentists. Greenwood also had its own school system, post office, a savings and loan bank, hospital, and bus and taxi service. Greenwood was home to far less affluent African Americans as well. A significant number still worked in menial jobs such as janitors, dishwashers, porters, and domestics. The money they earned outside of Greenwood was spent within the district. It is said within Greenwood, every dollar would change hand 19 times before it left the community, said Place. Yeah. It wasn't long before the affluent African Americans attracted the attention of local white residents who resented the upscale lifestyle of people they deemed to be an inferior race. Quote, I think the word jealousy is certainly appropriate during this time, says Place. If you have particularly poor whites who are looking at this prosperous community who have large homes, fine furniture, crystals, china, linens, etc., the reaction is they don't deserve that. With the resurgence of the Ku Klux Klan, Black residents in Greenwood feared racial violence and the removal of their voting rights. The Oklahoma Supreme Court for years routinely upheld the state's restrictions on voting access for African Americans, subjecting them to the poll tax and literacy tests. And lynchings proliferated across the country, sorry, particularly during the Red Summer of 1919, where anti-Black riots erupted in major cities across the United States, including Tulsa. In response, the Tulsa Star encouraged Black residents to take up arms and to show up at courthouses and jails to make sure Black people who were on trial were not taken and killed by white lynch mobs. But the heightened racial animosity in Tulsa erupted in 1921 when 19-year-old Dick Rowland, a Black shoe shiner, was accused of attempted sexual assault of a 17-year-old white elevator operator named Sarah Page. When an angry white mob went into the courthouse to demand that the sheriff hand over Rowland, the sheriff refused. A group of about 25 armed Black men, including many World War I veterans, then went into the courthouse to offer to help guarding Rowland. As word of a possible lynching spread, a group of around 75 armed Black men returned to the courthouse, where they were met by some 1,500 whites. After clashes between the groups, the Black men retreated to Greenwood. Mobs of armed white men then descended on Greenwood, looting homes, burning down businesses, and shooting Black residents dead on the spot. With millions in property damage and no help from the city, the rebuilding of Greenwood began almost immediately, thanks to the assistance of the NAACP. Other Black townships in Oklahoma, donations from Black churches, and a resilient Greenwood community. However, some businesses, like the Tulsa Star newspaper, were permanently shuttered in the wake of the violence. The Greenwood district still exists today, but after decades of urban renewal and integration, the area's demographics and business resemble little of its storied past. And that be that.
Compared to our ancestors and forefathers, we soft, bro. They paint the Dr. King versus Malcolm X narrative as the any means necessary versus turn the other cheek narrative, right? They both had to be willing to be slapped in the face for either of those methods to have any merit. So even who they declare a pacifist, Dr. King, for us and for our causes, even as he became the champion of peace and nonviolence, for us, he was willing to be slapped in the face. We're not even willing in a lot of cases to be talked bad about. Our people were taking up arms and literally putting their lives and the lives of their families on the line to further our causes. And we can't even say Black Lives Matter without it being a contentious.
Well, I can definitely say that. Black Lives Matter. But that's going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. Once again, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. Most of the time, they call me Q Ward around these parts.
Amen. As we should. Today's show is produced by our producer, Ms. Maggie, a.k.a. Maggie B. Knowing.
She do.
Hit the website, civiccypher.com. We have a store. You can buy some merch. Yeah, if you want a Civic Cypher shirt. I know, right? Crazy. It took us this long. But yeah, if you want to buy a Civic Cypher shirt, help us on our way, man. Of course, if you don't need a shirt, you can donate. We take
y'all
donations.
See, y'all should see Rams' model shirts. It's really quite it's quite the sight. makes you want to buy a shirt or five.
You're very kind, Q. Anyway, yeah, check out the website. Follow us on social media at Civic Cypher. Make a donation. Share the podcast with your friends. Share the show with your friends. And until next week, y'all. Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds is big tune, from sunlight to moon. Bussing off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back, you like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander / beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show. Get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines. Wake up, refuse, and resist. Like this. Like this. Like this. Like this. Like this.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national native issues.